Welcome, everyone. Welcome to our global learning community, to Teaching Peace in Schools, Cultivating Restorative School Communities. This is session four tonight. Wherever you're calling and connecting in from, it may not be night yet. Again, warm welcome to you. I am Molly Rowan Leach. As always, it's a pleasure and honor to be with you and to conduct this call and this learning experience. Tonight's session is jam-packed with great information, and I'm really looking forward to introducing you here in just a moment to our faculty for tonight. The title of tonight's session is Cool Water for a Thirsty District, Implementing Restorative Practices in Orange County Public Schools, otherwise known as OCPS, in Florida. And, of course, that's with Dr. Mara Schiff and Nancy Charles. Just a few quick tips and notes about our course. We're, again, in session four tonight. We have 10 sessions altogether. We have a great session coming up next week focused on NVC in schools with Jim and Jory Mansky. Tonight's screen share is going to be some great slides offered to you from Dr. Schiff and Nancy Charles, as well as informational slides that you'll see especially towards the end. But just a reminder that if you haven't already gotten the link as a registrant and participant of this learning community for our main course page, which includes all the audios, all the slide presentations that are available, as well as additional links that our faculty are providing, that's at teach-course-page, with the password being Peace is the Way. Again, that's a two-step process for you. Just a quick reminder to dial into the audio portion of our experience and then also to click the viewing capacity on the screen share. So hoping that most of you have that tuned in and dialed in a bit more now. And if there's anybody that needs support surrounding technological issues, or if you have feedback, we very warmly welcome that. It always helps us to do a better job. So please email us at info, that's I-N-F-O, at peacealliance.org. That's info at peacealliance, all one word, .org. I'd like to thank all of our partners that have made this possible. We had many people come into the fold to help share this information out and distribute the opportunity for this learning experience, this overview course. So thank you to all our partners. Those logos will be showing up tonight on the screen share. I encourage you to please visit their websites as you can. And also to our main co-hosts and presenters of this 10-week overview course, the Peace Alliance, and the National Association of Community and Restorative Justice. They're shaping justice for the 21st century. Encouraging you to check them out at nacrj.org. Without further ado, I'd like to just say a few words about Dr. Mara Schiff. Besides being an extraordinary conference host, she was the magician behind the curtain for the very successful conference that was held by the NACRJ last year in Florida, featuring over 500 participants from all over the country, and an incredible experience of panels and speakers over the course of 3 days. She is currently an associate professor in the School of Criminology and Criminal Justice at Florida Atlantic University, and also president of PeaceWorks Consulting. She has had over 30 years' experience in criminal and juvenile justice research, planning, evaluation, training, and teaching, focusing on restorative community justice. She's completed 2 edited and 1 co-authored book on RJ, or restorative justice, as well as numerous academic journal articles and book chapters. She's received evaluation and training grants from the National Institute of Justice and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, as well as other national and local organizations. She served as the conference host, as I mentioned, and lead organizer for the 5th National Conference on Community and Restorative Justice, again last year in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and she serves as an active board member as well for the NACRJ. Nancy Charles, who is also our co-faculty tonight, is a district resource coach in the Minority Achievement Office in Orange County Public Schools, Florida, which is the 10th largest school district in the nation. She currently coordinates the district's implementation of restorative justice approaches and collaborates with district and school administrators servicing all 38 middle schools in the district. Nancy has worked as an educator for over 20 years in many different areas: classroom teacher of history, language arts and French, parent liaison, literacy coach, and instructional coach. In addition, she has conducted district professional development on culturally responsive instruction and ESOL endorsement courses on culture and teaching methods. Nancy has received recognition and awards for her advocacy for students and community service. She has a BS in marketing, an MS in curriculum instruction, and she's certified in educational leadership. So it's very exciting tonight to welcome Nancy and Mara, and also just to remind you that tonight, towards the further section of our 90 minutes together, we will be opening up the lines for conversation. In order to ask a question or a comment, you will be wanting to press 1 on your telephone keypad. That'll be later on tonight. And so without further ado, I think you're in for a great treat tonight, inspirational, wisdom-based, experience-based information from Dr. Schiff and Nancy Charles. Welcome to you both.
Thank you, Molly.
So I'm just going to jump in here. I've done webinars before. This is a slightly new format for me. So I'm going to guess that everybody is out there listening. And I'm going to go through a bit about both restorative justice generally, why we're doing it, and then we're going to leap into what we've been doing in Orange County as a model, I hope, for what can be done in large school districts around the country. I think you've already probably read the description of this session, which I've got now up on the screen, so I'm going to go through that. I have a lot of slides for you tonight, so I want to move through those quickly and efficiently, giving you a chance to hear everything, but also to make sure we leave enough time for questions and answers at the end. The title of our presentation tonight is Cool Water for a Thirsty District, a Case Study, Implementing Restorative Justice Practices in Orange County Public Schools. The reason we've titled it is because as we were going through this process, we found that people were drinking in their experience in restorative practices in ways that we hadn't really realized, that we were giving people really a cool drink of something they'd been looking for a long, long time in how to do their job and how to build relationships with students in ways that we hadn't really allowed quite the space for in the way that restorative practices did. That's me. That's a better picture of me. I'm so sorry I don't have a picture of Nancy yet, my beautiful friend and colleague, Nancy. But I like this picture better than the one that Molly had, so I felt like I had to show you that. Our goal for tonight in this session are to clarify restorative practice values, principles, practices, and outcomes, to examine both whole school climate and culture building strategies alongside incident-driven restorative practice strategies, to understand implementation with flexibility, creativity, and other restorative practice values, and then to go into our case study of what's been happening in Orange County Public Schools and look at the highlights and obstacles of the OCPS approach, look at takeaways for teachers, administrators, and parents, and then to talk a bit about next steps and get questions and answers from everybody on the call. Some of the takeaways we hope that we'll provide you with tonight are for teachers to look at implementing at the classroom level to build culture, to engage with other instructional and non-instructional staff, actually, for a coordinated strategy. For administrators, to look at ways to build infrastructure with necessary training and technical assistance to develop a strategic plan and how to develop a whole school restorative culture and climate. And for parents who may be on the call, to look at how to understand and work with your school to support restorative justice practices and reduce disciplinary referrals and suspension. I want to say up front that I'm using RJP, or restorative justice practices, as my terminology. Some people use restorative justice. Some people use restorative practices. I believe that, of course, the restorative terminology is critical. But what we want really is an approach that is justice-based. And I tend to leave that word in there, though not all of my friends and colleagues do. I also think this is about how we implement practices in a restorative justice context. So I tend to use that acronym and those three words to describe what I'm talking about. And I want to say that up front so everybody's clear on the terminology that I use. First, we want to look a bit at why do this? Why use restorative justice in schools? Well, what the data say is that what we've been doing in terms of disciplinary policy is not producing the outcomes that we hope for. In fact, that school suspension and expulsion is actually increasing the likelihood that students will be held back, that they won't graduate, and that they'll become involved with the justice system. It actually increases the chances of subsequent suspension, expulsion, and dropping out, and results in poor academic achievement and standardized test scores, even when we control for factors such as race and socioeconomic status. What the data also say are that Black students in particular are more likely to be suspended and expelled for minor infractions, that only 17% of public school enrollment is Black, but they represent 34% of suspensions. Black students are 3 times more likely to be suspended than similarly situated white students and 4 times more likely to end up in correctional facilities if they have learning disabilities. I'm noticing as I do this some of the typos on my slides. I apologize to everyone who is seeing that. The Office for Civil Rights has put together a variety of data that is spurring a lot of the use of restorative practices in schools. I've been doing this work for a long, long time in restorative justice generally and in restorative practices in schools specifically for about 8 or 9 years now. In roughly the last 5 years, I've seen incredible growth in the desire and demand for restorative practices in schools, and this is spurred largely by the awareness of racially disparate disciplinary outcomes in schools. So what this slide shows you is that while African American students represent 18% of the students in the sample, but 35% and more of in-school suspensions, out-of-school suspensions, both single and multiple suspensions and expulsions. So you can see that the rates of suspension are at least twice the rate of their representation in the population for African American students. When we punish, we think that we're producing an outcome designed to create a result that has students behave better and have better academic outcomes. But in fact, evidence shows that punishment actually increases feelings of shame and humiliation and decreases feelings of guilt, which are exactly the psychological conditions that give rise to violent behavior, in which the rage that has been provoked by being humiliated is not inhibited by feelings of guilt. When we look at racial disparity in schools, we can see that there's been some improvement over the last several years, and that disparity is decreasing among all populations, and perhaps to a greater degree for Black students than Latino or white students. But if we look at what's happening in the largest 20 districts in the country, and I will say up front that some of this data is derived from 2011, which is now a little dated, but there is not more recent data available. If we look at these and we look at each category of enrollment and suspensions, if we look in the column where it says white students, you can see that the enrollment is typically higher. The percentage enrollment of white students is higher than the percentage of white students getting suspended in every category. It's often enrollment is about twice the rate of suspensions for white students. But when we look at African American students in particular, that flips. And we can look at just about every district here and C, that African-American students are suspended at least twice and often three times the rate of their representation in the enrollment in the district. If we look at some of the districts that are adopting restorative justice as policy, not only in response to racial disciplinary disparity, but as ways of decreasing harsh and exclusionary discipline in general, we can see that some of the largest districts in the country are adopting restorative justice practices. I want to be clear that when I say something like this, it doesn't mean that these are the only districts. It also doesn't necessarily mean that every school in every district is doing it. It means that some schools are doing it and that the district has acknowledged restorative justice as a desired policy in the district. If we look at some of the research outcomes, we can see that places that have implemented restorative justice practices in one form or another continue to see decreases in referrals, suspensions, police tickets, out-of-school suspensions, a variety of outcomes in a variety of different places where we predominantly see overwhelmingly positive results. I personally have not seen any results suggesting negative outcomes as a result of implementing restorative justice interventions. Research is now just starting to come out on the relationship between restorative justice and decreasing racial disciplinary disparity. Some of the older research showed that schools with proportionately more black students were less likely to use restorative techniques when responding to student behavior. But when we look at more recent data now, in particular, a recent study in Denver showed that restorative practices in schools reduced the black-white gap from a difference of nearly 12 points to just over 8 points. Another study showed that higher restorative practice implementers issued fewer discipline referrals to Latino and African American students compared with lower implementers. In Oakland, California, saw decreased student suspensions by 74% after 2 years, and referrals for violence fell 77% after 1 year. And racial disciplinary disparity was eliminated in their pilot school. I know you're going to be hearing from Fania Davis and other Oakland school district presenters in the course of these 10 weeks, and I know they'll be able to speak much more about it. I just want to show as a short case study in Oakland, which is really one of the leaders in being able to implement restorative practices. The scope of the problem, which showed African-American students representing 34% of the population, but 67% of out-of-school referrals, 50% of expulsion, 40% were not graduating high school, and 66% who dropped out entered the criminal justice system. After implementing restorative practices, they saw dramatic decreases in suspensions, decreases in the suspension rate for African-Americans, specifically decreases in instructional days lost for African-American males, trained over 1,000 staff, and a variety of other positive results. I also want to say that these slides will be available after this, so you don't have to worry about getting everything now. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what is restorative justice in schools, because I'm not sure among those who are on the call exactly everybody's state of knowledge. For some of you, this may be quite redundant. For some of you, this may add to what you already know. And for some of you, this may be completely new information. So I'm going to ask you to just locate wherever you are in this and listen with an open mind and an open heart. Ollie, are you still there on the call? Can you hear me? Or speak? I feel a bit
sure
like
am.
I'm speaking. Okay, good. I just want to check in because I feel like I'm speaking into a vacuum. I just want to check in with you and make sure everything is coming out clearly and everything's good.
Everything's looking great on the screen share. Thank you.
Okay, good. So in implementing restorative justice practices, in traditional systems, we ask what law or rule was broken, we ask whose fault was it or who did it and who do we blame, and then we say what do they deserve or how should we punish them. In a restorative approach, we're asking completely different questions. We're saying who's been hurt and what harm was done, what are their needs, and whose obligation is this, or what repair is needed and who's responsible. The idea is to minimize some of those traditional questions and move increasingly into a restorative approach that focuses on harm, relationships, needs, and repair. So I'm showing this. Some of you have seen this already, and I'm not going to go through all of it. But it's a comparison of different ways of looking at how do we respond to misbehavior in school. So I'll just point out a couple of these. In a punitive system, misbehavior is defined as breaking school rules or letting the school down. In a restorative system, it's defined as harm by one person or group to another. In a punitive system, we focus on what happened in establishing guilt. In a restorative system, we focus on problem solving by expressing needs and feelings and how we can address this in the future. These are completely different responses. I'll let you look at these for a moment. But these are completely different responses about how do we respond when something has happened in our community, when harm has been done. How we respond to it in a way that increases engagement and reparation or that increases exclusion and disintegration. So when we ask about the goals of restorative practices, we're looking at a variety of goals to build a healthy community, to build healthy relationships between educators and students, to reduce and prevent and improve harmful behavior, to repair harm and restore positive relationships, to resolve conflict while holding people accountable. Some of you have probably seen this, and I suspect some of you out there have done a variety of different types of training. When we look at the different ways that restorative justice practices can be implemented, we can do things at what we might call a tier one level in a PBIS or an MTSS system. And where we start with just basic affective statements in classrooms or between teachers and students or even between adults in school. So I feel disrespected when you talk while I'm talking. I'm proud of you for doing your best. But focusing on the feeling that's happening in response to a situation by using feeling words rather than judgment-based words. Asking affective questions. I noticed you weren't paying attention. Is everything okay? But shifting our language, it's very different to say, I feel disrespected when you talk when I'm talking, than saying, be quiet or stop talking now. It's a very different way of approaching what the problem is. At a tier two level, we might have small conferences pulling students aside and saying, what happened? How were you affected? By us as adults being able to express our feelings about an incident and then ask somebody about theirs and then to look at what might be done to resolve the situation. Again, I want to acknowledge this is not mine. I didn't make this up. It's from Safe Schools and Healthy Students, and also the International Institute of Restorative Practices uses this continuum as well. And then when we get to tier three or more severe incidences of conflict, we can do harm circles or other forms of bringing people together in more intensive restorative interventions to really understand what happened, what relationships have been broken, what harm has occurred, what are people's needs around that harm, what impact has been felt, and what do we need to do to make it right. In restorative justice, we're really looking at some specific principles when we respond to conflict. At the conflict level, where some other things are at the climate and culture building level. At a conflict level, we're looking at repairing harm. We're looking at including stakeholders, specifically those people who feel they have a stake in what happened and what needs to be done to make it right. In a school community, that might include certainly the students, it might include teachers, it might include other adults in the school, and it might include other students who were affected by the behavior. We're really also looking at shifting roles and relationships. In a traditional school disciplinary system, the adults have all the authority, and they design systems and tell students what will happen to them as a result. In a restorative approach, we're shifting those roles and relationships to have adults facilitate conversations both with each other and with students. Rather than being authoritative decision makers, we're actually looking at them to be facilitative problem solvers and to shift responsibility from residing solely with adults in the environment to being shared among everybody, including youth in the environment. All of this, of course, with a particular eye towards maintaining safety in the school, to holding people who have done harm accountable for their behavior, while also really focusing on what students and others do well, building competencies so that people can be known for doing good instead of just simply doing harm. And all of this is in a particular context. The context in which all of this sits, the umbrella above all of it, is around relationships. We can't have healthy communities if we don't have healthy relationships. So all of this is fundamentally about building healthy relationships. when we look at restorative responses to harm, we can say that crime or harm is a violation of individuals and communities that creates obligations to make things right, that justice is about repairing that harm caused to victims, offenders, and community, and that restorative processes are seeking to rebuild relationships damaged by crime and other conflicts. Some of you have seen this. This is a window developed by the International Institute of Restorative Practices, where we look at levels of control and support. When we're low on control and support, we're being neglectful. We're not doing anything. When we're high on control but low on support, we may be doing to people in a punitive way. When we're high on support but low in control, we may be doing for people in a permissive way. But when we're high on control and high on support, that's where we say is the restorative window, where we are doing with others rather than doing nothing or to someone or for someone, but rather with. When we look at restorative justice and response, specifically in response to harm, there's two key elements. The first is to have a non-adversarial, dialogue-based decision-making process where affected parties come together to discuss the harm. Once that discussion has occurred in a way that everyone has been given voice and everybody has said what needs to be said, we then develop an agreement for going forward based on the input of all stakeholders about what's necessary to repair that harm. If we're trying to identify a continuum of restorative practices, because, of course, not every event is fully restorative. Restorative practices are implemented to greater or lesser degrees in different environments. But some of the ways to gauge how restorative is what I am doing or what my school is doing is, does the practice address harms, needs, and causes? Does it adequately attend to the needs of those harms? Are offenders encouraged to take responsibility? Are relevant stakeholders involved? Is there an opportunity for dialogue and participatory decision-making? Is the process, the practice respectful to all parties? This is not an exhaustive list by any means. But it's some ways, that some questions you can ask yourself to say, is what I'm doing restorative? How can I gauge that to know if I really am implementing a restorative practice? So all of that said, I can take a breath now. All of that said, as context, let's get into talking about what's going on in Orange County. So in Orange County 2012 census data suggested we had about 22% non-Hispanic black population, about 70% non-Hispanic white population, about 23% population under 18. And I want to say that in Orange County, a lot of this was spurred by issues of racial disparity in the district and looking at what were going to be viable ways of addressing that. If you look at the racial breakdown of schools of students in the district, Orange County has about 27% black, about 32% white, and about 32% Hispanic. The Federal Office for Civil Rights data for OCPS, again, this is 2011 data, so not everything is exactly the same now as it was then, but this is the most recent data publicly available. The district enrollment was about 27.5%, but if we look at in-school suspensions, that was about 51%. Out-of-school suspensions, also about 51%. Expulsions is such a low number, it's a little harder to read. But so rate of in and out of school suspension is about double the rate of enrollment, particularly for black students. And I'm using the term black rather than African American because not all black students are African American. And I want to say as a caveat that I understand how often the words that we use to categorize what we call race or racial differences in people is not always accurate. And so I'm using terms here that I know are not always accurate, but they're how we tend to characterize these particular populations in school districts and in data. When we look at data for middle school suspensions in Orange County, we could see that about 65% of our suspensions for middle schools alone were for black students, 26% were for white students. This data is from the 2013-14 school year. When we look at the total number of suspensions as compared with the total number of students suspended, we could see that for Hispanic students, we were suspending at about 1 3/4, you know, of a students were getting suspended at a, how can I say this in a better way? About one, a student had about 1 3/4 suspensions per student. What we look at for black students, we can see that black students are suspended about twice the rate of the students are getting suspended more than once, I should say. If we look at the number 2,622 students resulted in 5,957 suspensions. So students were tending to get suspended more than once in that population. All of these students were tending to get suspended more than once, but if you looked at it, it was particularly high for black students. And if we look at the kinds of offenses for which students were getting suspended, we can see higher percentages for black students in just about all of these categories: battery, disrespect, fighting, gross insubordination. Over 60% of those who were suspended were black. In Florida, we have a multi-tiered systems of support, which is like a PBS model. I suspect that many of your districts have something quite like this, if not quite the same thing. When we're looking to implement restorative practices, we're looking at a variety of different types of interventions at Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3. So at Tier 1, where we're talking about core and universal instructions and support that all students get. All students in a school might get Tier 1 interventions designed towards building healthy climate and culture in the school. So if we put a restorative model into this, what this looks like from a restorative perspective is creating a restorative environment where we do things like have affective restorative statements, student-led guidelines, daily check-in circles, student classroom and school norming. At a Tier 2 level, where we have targeted supplemental interventions and support, where we're looking for more focused and targeted intervention, particularly when there are behavioral or instructional issues. In a restorative format, we might call that maintaining the restorative environment, where we have informal individual and or classroom conferences to identify and address harm, to reaffirm norms and values, but to do that in a way that is specifically targeted for specific violations or specific students. And then at the Tier 3 level, where we're looking at intensive individualized interventions and support when there has been a particularly severe problem that has to be dealt with outside of a classroom, but are the types of offenses that are looking at suspension and at the most severe level, multiple suspensions and possibly expulsions. In a restorative approach, we might call that repairing a restorative environment, where we're talking about formal conferences, a model called school accountability boards or peacemaking circles. So what's been happening in Orange County schools? With all of this as background, we then started working in Orange County schools. And here's the specific model that's been emerging through our work there. And I want to say also Orange County Public Schools is in Orlando, Florida, for those of you who don't know that. So what did we do to start? And I'm shortly going to invite Nancy also to jump in and join me in this. Nancy, I want to say a word or two about Nancy. Nancy is the restorative justice coordinator at the district level and has been extraordinary in getting this initiative off the ground and really taking ownership of it at the district level to make sure that this strategy is permeating all of the middle schools and permeating the district.
How do I present it?
I'm sorry, say again, Nancy.
Sorry, Mara, can you hear me?
You there?
Mara, can you hear? No, I didn't say anything, I'm sorry.
Okay, everybody meet Nancy, there's Nancy. I've been doing a lot of talking. So the early steps, in this process, the first thing that really happened was way back in really spring to summer 2014, when I was contacted by the district. And the district contacted me and said, we'd like to talk about implementing restorative practices in this district, and we'd like you to come do a training for us. We had a conversation about what a training would provide and what might be missing from a single training. And what I particularly loved about working with this district is that each time we talked, the district became increasingly aware of building a comprehensive and really thoughtful strategy. I called that strategically stepping back, where first the idea was to provide a training. And when it became clear that a training is great, a training is wonderful, I have no objection to doing training, but a training in and of itself will not provide a restorative initiative. It's 2 or 3 or 4 days of a wonderful experience learning about restorative practices, but it does not build the infrastructure and the ongoing technical assistance and support that a district really needs in order to build a viable strategy. And Orange County really recognized that and owned it and kept stepping back to where we were going to have a training, and then district administrators stepped back and said, well, why don't you come talk to us first about what this really is? And then they stepped back and said, well, maybe we need our own training first before we implement into the district so we understand what we're asking people to do. And then they took a step even further back and said, well, we need a training, but we also need a strategic plan, and can you help us develop that? So what we wound up with was the district decided to hire me as a consultant to first come up and really just give a workshop on restorative justice 101 basics and help them develop a district-level strategic plan that could be presented to the superintendent and the school board from a position of really understanding better what this was. In January of 2015, then, after having done this initial three-day workshop, which led to district administrators spending really a bunch of time fleshing out that strategic plan in order to present it to the school board in November of 2014. In January of 2015, I made a presentation to all the middle schools, the idea being that we were going to select about five pilot schools. In Orange County Public Schools are broken up into what are called learning communities. And there are 5 learning communities in different geographic jurisdictions in the county, in the district. So we were going to select a pilot school from each learning community to be our model school to implement restorative practices. That was the plan. But it didn't quite turn out that way, because in about between April and May, the Orange County Public Schools School Board decided that they felt that they were so actually in support of this that their position was that it wasn't fair to only have some students in some schools be eligible for this initiative, which might advantage some students and disadvantage other students. They decided that this really should be implemented full scale in all 38 middle schools in the district. So we rolled out we rolled out in the summer to all 38 middle schools. In June 2015, there was a determination at the district level to focus on 3 specific disciplinary infractions, to focus on insubordination, teacher disrespect, and fighting. So that wasn't to say that you couldn't use it for anything else, but that if you had to pick a focus for the restorative initiative in your school, that those were the 3 things to focus on. In the summer of 2015, we delivered comprehensive 3-day trainings for restorative justice teams from all 38 middle schools. So every middle school sent a team of anywhere from 4 to 6 people from their school to learn about restorative justice and to develop an action plan to go back into their school for academic year 2015-2016. Nancy, anything you want to add to any of that so far? I'll keep going.
I've got Nancy's mic open, but for some reason it doesn't seem like she's hearing. So go ahead, Mara, and we'll see if we can get Nancy up and running.
Oh, I'm back on now. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
Gotcha.
Yes, and everything you've said is on point. Great.
Terrific. Thank you. So the next thing was after we did that initial training, and I want to say that in that initial training we trained – give or take about 200 people over the summer. We ran 3 very large trainings. I brought up a team of consultants. We had four different consultants working with the district to deliver these very large trainings of 60 to 70 people each. After that happened, we took a step back and developed some infrastructure. So in fall 2015 was really spent developing the infrastructure at the district level for how to bring this out into the middle school. So a variety of things happened. Nancy, who's on the call with us, was assigned as the district level restorative justice coordinator, who I can't say enough about what a masterful job she's done developing this infrastructure. I also can't say enough about how important it is to have someone in that position at a district level, and somebody who really gets and owns this initiative and owns it as something not just as another thing to do, but with a firm belief in the importance and the viability and the sustainability and the value of this for the school district. Nancy developed a remarkable SharePoint collaboration site, which we're going to show you tonight, that schools could go to that had a bunch of materials and survey and data on it, where the district could both deliver materials to the schools, so keep them ongoingly apprised of new resources to develop their own restorative strategy, but also to keep track of what they're doing and to keep track of the data so that the district was aware at all to the degree possible. Obviously, data is only good as what's being input at any given moment. But the object of this was and continues to be keeping track and understanding what districts are doing at Tier 1, 2, and 3 levels and the success of those things so that we know both numerically, quantitatively, and qualitatively what's happening at the school. Also during the fall, the administrative team, which is comprised of area administrators over each of the learning communities as well as the restorative justice coordinator, made visits to the schools to see what they were doing. And we also established ongoing training, three-day ongoing trainings that started in December and are ongoing now. I'll talk about those in a minute, so that there was we were continually building awareness and teams in each of the schools and kept building that out. So each school had a primary team with a lead contact, and we keep building out that team every month with trainings to between 15 and 30 new people from the implementing schools, as well as we do a follow-up training. I'll talk about that in a minute. There was also another presentation to the school board in 2015 with how we were doing so far after the summer rollout. December 2015 to May 2016 is when we're focusing on training to build the restorative justice team in the district. So every month, starting in December, we hold 2 days a month training for new team members in each school, and we hold a one-day follow-up training for people who have participated in either the summer training or any of the new team member trainings, that they can come back and get additional support and networking with other schools also implementing to find out what's working in the schools. Where are their challenges in the schools? How can we benefit and learn from each other's experiences, and how can we get a little more experience in facilitation and what we need to do in order to be effective in our school. So we do that for 3 days every month. At the same time, there's ongoing data collection and school support through both the website and going out to schools collecting data. We're selecting model schools. Now that schools have had a chance to begin implementation, we can start seeing which are the schools that are really taking this and running with it. And so what we would like to do is develop model schools in each learning community where we can devote more intensive resources so that those schools can be built out to provide support to other schools in their learning communities and be used as the school from which others can learn. I have to say that rolling out to 38 schools from the get-go is a very ambitious project. And where I might advocate starting a little smaller, we didn't have that option in Orange County. So now we're being able to take a step back and really concentrate on the schools that we think show the most promise, put some additional resources and support into those schools, and then use that as a way to build out into other schools in each learning community. The district has also decided to implement into all high schools starting next summer to further build as a restorative district. Nancy, I want to turn the controls over to you for a second, if I can, to show the SharePoint site. You think you could do that for a minute? And
sure,
I'm going to ask everybody to bear with me for a minute. I'm going to give control now to Nancy. Did that work?
Okay.
Oh, no, wait. Wait, I have to change presenter.
Now, this is your host, Molly Rowan-Leach, and I just want to say, if this, for some reason, doesn't technologically streamline, we will definitely make sure that we catch all of you on the resource section of our main site on this point, okay? So if, for some reason, Nancy isn't able to share her screen tonight, we'll find a way, hopefully, I'm hoping, to give you some information about what she's trying to do here or what she has developed with this site, just as a note for you all.
And Molly, I don't want to
see it now.
So Nancy, can you put up your screen now? Maybe I have to pause mine, Molly?
I'm trying to see if it will come on.
So maybe I have to pause mine and turn it over to you. Please stand by. We're having technical difficulties. Sorry, folks.
I just want to explain, I know Nancy had, it looks like it's happening now. Okay. Nancy, you were in a traffic jam due to a car accident, and I hope everybody was okay. And so thank you for your patience, everyone, while we try and get you this really valuable information. The presenter needs to start sharing the screen again, Mara. So if you could please not pause your screen share, given that you are the primary presenter, and just pass the controls over to Nancy. Nancy, you need to pick up the controls and make sure that your screen share is on, pushing the play button.
Well,
and if that's not going to work, we should probably just move on.
Okay.
Is it not?
But it would be great, Nancy. It would be great if you could try and describe some of this, and then, like I said, we can catch people on the other end of the class tonight when we post things tomorrow.
No problem. I apologize for that. yes, you have to inspect what you expect. And knowing that, knowing very well that the school board would want to know, how are we checking on this? How are we assuring that these, what we're asking schools to do are taking place? And so, and also in addition, we had many resources, of course, after the trainings, some schools wanted forms, they could use circle requests, or agreement forms, and even though some of them had their own, of course, but then they had a lot of needs and wanted to make sure that they had everything, all the tools that they needed to implement the this initiative. And also Mara had a lot of information that she wanted to share with us as well. So what I did was look at our SharePoint site, and where we keep our projects, my department, the Minority Achievement Office, we have one a link for each of our projects and initiatives. So I looked at the initiative of restorative justice and decided to put everything there so that everyone can have access to it. And so that we don't have to use a Dropbox, but this is a tool that all schools have in the district, and they would know how to access the collaboration site. So I developed this as a resource tool for our district, and I have information documentation for before circles, for during circles. I specifically segregated the information so that it was quick access. You know, they would know, for example, before a circle, these are the tools I might need to prepare for the circle, during the circles, and then post circles, the agreement forms that they might need. In addition, I had a link for Mara where she was able to deposit all the info that she was sharing with us in the PowerPoint presentations, and she did that. And I also had a link for the PowerPoint presentations that we developed that they could use at their school site to introduce restorative justice. And basically when I say they, I mean the contact person or the head, the lead person at each school. Mara mentioned earlier that each school had a school team, and there was a lead, so that person would drive everything at the school with their team. And we require that the teams meet at least twice a month to discuss how restorative justice is coming along and any support they might need or just to help each other out. In addition to the documentation, there's a calendar on the site where all the trainings are posted that are coming up because I plan everything for the year. And schools can see that, as well as when they are meeting. And each school might, you know, put on the calendar their meeting every other Thursday. And that's posted. That way, when I'm making school visits, I could just go on the site and see, you know, which schools are meeting at a certain time and visit them. In addition, I mentioned inspecting what you expect. We have a survey log. It's called a survey because that's what it is in the site, which is where about six questions are asked, and it takes about 1 minute to complete. Schools are asked, you know, when the circles took place, who did them. Let me see what else. Who did the circles, and how many students were involved, how many staff, adults were involved, and did they have a positive outcome from doing the circle, yes or no, and was a referral issued, and if any suspension days were reduced. And so we did this, and it takes about 1 minute to complete. So then schools do this, and every 2 weeks it has to be updated. And this way, when we report to the powers that be, school board or superintendent, we can see who's implementing. It's not just hearsay, yes, I visited and this school's doing that. We have a documentation of which what the schools are doing and how many circles they've completed during the year or during the 2 weeks. And this information can be downloaded onto a spreadsheet for evaluation. There's also a little section on that survey for comments, and schools write in comments about the success of it and, you know, some things that a student might have said about their content, being content with what happened and the outcome of the circle. So it's been very positive, and very informative for everyone. And that sometimes I have to mention as well, sometimes schools are a little bit behind in completing their logs, and I just have to send them a friendly reminder to please do that. But the point is that it's there, and we have an idea how many circles are being conducted at the schools. What else do we have? And also there's a link for each school where they can post pictures of what's happening and some documentation they want to share. That's for them to just post whatever it is that they want to post. And because of this collaboration site, we were able to see that as schools we had a system in place to monitor what's happening in addition to the school visits. And the school board decided that, okay, I feel like they felt comfortable that with everything in place and organized, that we could now go out to the high schools and launch this initiative with the support structure in place. And which is what we're doing, studying this summer. Mara would be conducting other trainings for the high schools and getting them on board. And especially because we know that middle school students, eighth graders, are now used to the restorative justice practices, and they're going to be going to high school asking for it, I'm sure. So I wanted to make sure that we continue the process for when they get into high school. And this is not to say that, of course, this is not to say that, of course, everything is perfect, and we're very well aware that we have a lot of kinks to iron out, but the commitment, the enthusiasm that we've seen at the schools and the positive outcomes that they've had really is heartening because we feel like the schools are owning this. We've just, out of 38 schools, I think we have two that have not, that are a little bit slow about getting on board, but this will be changing, I'm sure, soon. As more people that are more enthusiastic are put in place. And what is really crucial is having the lead person be very very pro restorative justice and committed to the practice, because they spread their enthusiasm throughout the school and commitment. And I think is a really key to making it successful at the school, so as successful as it can be. Anything else, Mara, I can add?
No, I think that's great, Nancy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I forgot to mention that, what a wonderful job Mara has done. And getting the schools aboard with the short notice of putting, launching that to 38 schools at the same time. But she did an amazing job with us in getting us started with this, and we thank her so much.
Yeah, 38 was a little more than I was anticipating started. But I have to say, really, it's the schools that are doing the work. It's the districts that are doing the work. I'm providing context and support and training. But really, all of that is not worth anything if the schools themselves are not owning the process and developing their own initiatives. So to me, that's where the credit really goes.
I remember that after we had the first follow-up workshop where we invited schools that were trained over the summer to see how they were doing and to help them hone their skills. And several of the schools came up and they brought videos of some of the consequences that the students came up to, how they were going to restore the wrongs that had occurred, and the schools brought videos and it was very impressive, and PowerPoint presentations to share, which was really not even asked of them, but they were so excited about sharing what they have been doing at their school, the creativity, and how they own the initiative, and so that schools that were not quite as on board, and they got really energized from the energy that was exuding from all the members that were really committed to the initiative.
Yeah, it's been a remarkable journey, I have to say. I'd like to just spend another maybe seven minutes talking about where we are now and some of the highlights, and then I'd like to open it up for questions for the remaining 25 minutes of our call, because I'm going to guess there's a lot of questions, or at least I hope there are. So I want to talk a little bit about why I think this has been successful in Orange County, and I want to say that my definition of successful does not mean we've got everything going perfectly right now. I don't mean that. I mean that we are implementing with an understanding of that this is a long-term process. This is not an overnight thing. But there are certain things that I believe contribute to developing a successful restorative initiative in a district. And first I want to say, is my screen showing now? Molly?
Your screen looks great.
Okay, which I just messed it up, didn't I?
It's perfect.
Okay. Okay, good. So one thing that was really important was district-level support. From the school board through the superintendent, this initiative was originally and has continued to be housed or owned, if you will, by the Minority Achievement Office, which is the office in which Nancy sits, the MAO. The district, having a district-level coordinator is critical. Also involved are the learning community area administrators. And one thing that Orange County did from the get-go that was actually brilliant, and I didn't realize how brilliant this was in the beginning, but legal counsel was included from the beginning. From the very first three-day training that I did working with Orange County, legal counsel was involved. And so what that meant was that there was somebody always present in this initiative who could answer legal questions that others of us were not to answer. And he's done a remarkable job. He comes to each of our trainings for just a little bit to make sure he can answer questions from the schools about legalities. And I would now advocate having legal counsel support involved from the beginning of an initiative. Having internal and external resources. So there was an external consultant team, myself and my team, where we've really built a remarkable relationship and trust within the district. Another thing I love about working with this district is they listen and they trust me. And they trust that if I'm suggesting something to do, that it's probably a good idea. I don't encounter a lot of resistance in Orange County, but rather a willingness and what I would call sort of pulling this towards them, rather than a resistance and figuring out all the ways it's not going to work. And I have had that experience in other implementation projects. And what I've found is that the level of trust and the type of relationships that we've been able to develop as a team in Orange County is remarkable, both as the external consultant team, but also with the internal district personnel and the school teams, and how that's all building out that models the kind of relationship building that we want to exemplify as a restorative district. Investment is critical. Orange County made a resource commitment that demonstrated ownership of the initiative. So not only did they invest in an external consultant team, but over the summer, all of the people who attended training were paid, and there's a term for that which I'm forgetting right now, but for their ongoing training. So there was overtime pay. There's support at the school level. There were remarkable and rather expensive, beautiful brochures developed. Teachers get to come to, or school personnel come to the trainings every month, and that means we have to get subs and a whole bunch of other investments. And Orange County is really owning this. This is not dependent on some external resource provided by a grant or a foundation that when it goes away, so does the initiative. Rather, the district itself is really owning this. The scope of which we're doing this, starting in 38 schools in the first year, moving into the 19 middle schools in the second year, is rather remarkable. I don't know the degree to which other districts have done it at that level, and it's simultaneously a blessing and a curse, I have to say. It's got advantages and disadvantages in rolling out at that scope, which I'll talk a little bit about later. Another thing that the district has done is really encouraged flexibility. Schools have been encouraged to implement using local strategies, things that work for their school in their culture. So some are implementing an ISS, which in this district is called PATH, Positive Alternatives to School Suspension. Some are implementing it Tier 1. Some are implementing it Tiers 2 and 3. Some are doing reentry circles. Some are working with adults as well as students. Some are doing a mix of everything. It really is. The district is encouraging flexibility and creativity at the school level. And my experience is that schools are really valuing this because this is not typical of the relationship between schools and the district. Districts often mandate what schools have to do, but this is being implemented in a way that's consistent with the values of restorative justice itself. So if we look at what are some of the highlights at the district level, and I want to say that this is a values-driven strategy because each of the words that you see italicized in this list, I would argue is an aspect of a restorative values-driven approach. So as I said, it's owned at the district level, and an infrastructure is being built out. The consultant team was engaged to support the process. Expectation, managing expectations. The district does not demand too much too soon from schools. There's not an unrealistic set of expectations. There's flexibility allowed at each school. Understanding this is a long-term strategy. Identifying and empowering a strong district-level RJ coordinator, that's Nancy. Building a comprehensive website with all materials available, developing the teams, including legal counsel, encouraging school-to-school networking. And I want to emphasize what Nancy just mentioned, where when schools come together in this one day, what we're seeing is some networking developing among schools and among school personnel who wouldn't otherwise have the opportunity to talk to each other about how this is working and to benefit from one another's experience. We're now at the point where we can cultivate model schools, which I know many districts do early on from the get-go. We're doing this in a slightly different way, where we're cultivating model schools after we are seeing which schools are likely to have the most success. At the school level, some of the highlights, as I mentioned, schools are implementing at a variety of different ways to suit individual school needs and interests and culture. Some schools have reached all students in Tier 1 events in just the first 3 months of this year, which understand, this is a big district. That can be up to 1,000 students or more in a school. Students are beginning to ask for proactive circles to head off problems as well as holding circles themselves. Some schools are training youth to lead circles and build youth leadership skills. Some schools have even brought in bus drivers to sit in circles to work on bus disciplinary issues. Some schools are developing teacher mentoring strategies as a result of sitting in circles. And not everything is happening in all schools at all the time, but something is happening in just about every school. So quantitatively, we've trained almost 300 people so far. We've held, district has held over 600 restorative events since last August. 80% of the students who participated in a restorative justice conflict event did not receive a disciplinary referral. Sorry, that next one number of students, we weren't able to get that number by the time of the presentation tonight, nor were we able to get the number. Over 5,000 students have experienced a restorative event. Positive outcomes are reported in 94% of the events that have happened in schools. And looking at data comparing the number of suspension days saved in the first quarter of this year compared to the first quarter of last year is over 700 days. I want to qualify, however, that we can't say that all 700 of those days are directly attributable to restorative justice practices. We know that suspension days have decreased by about 700 in the first quarter, but we don't have the data that shows this is specific just to restorative practices. But anecdotal data from schools suggests that they're seeing about an average of about a 50% decrease in disciplinary referrals in schools. So what are some of the obstacles that we're encountering? Ensuring fidelity with the practice and making sure that what everybody is calling and reporting as restorative is, in fact, something that we would consider a restorative event or high on a restorative continuum. As many of you in schools know, people get transferred from school to school. So a lot of the people that we trained in the summer then got transferred to other schools, leaving the teams much smaller than we anticipated and with less support. Engaging adults has been challenging in some schools, and engaging parents has been challenging in many schools. And I'm sure many of you listening to this call have experienced similar obstacles. Ensuring that we have ongoing funding is, of course, always an issue in any district faced with budgetary constraints and competing priorities. We don't really know yet the impact of implementing at such a large scale. We'll find that out. We believe we're doing great so far. But we won't really know what the impact has been for a while yet, other than our preliminary numbers certainly look good. Getting people to understand that this is not a program, but really a shift in a philosophical approach and a way of being in school. It's not a program with a curriculum that we give out, but it's a way of being. It's shifting from a punitive to a restorative climate, and that's somewhat more challenging in many ways than identifying a curriculum and training people to deliver it. Time always comes up as an issue of how do we find enough time to do particularly conflict circles, but even in classrooms where teachers are faced with so many competing demands and mandated initiatives that they must implement. And shifting culture in schools, of course, is particularly difficult. So what are some of the takeaways I might suggest for teachers on this call? Well, first I'd suggest the importance of working with both adults and students. This is not just a curriculum-based program to use with students, but it has to be adult-modeled and led, learning to use restorative strategies with peers. Classroom-level strategies, doing simple relationship building and norm setting and other restorative dialogue in short classroom periods, that restorative practices can be implemented at a culture and climate building level as well as at a conflict level. As I said, conflict-level strategies. And really, fundamentally, underneath this, the primary principle and value underlying a restorative approach is relationship building. So it works best when relationships are derived, when authority is derived because we are in strong, right relationship with one another, rather than because I'm an adult and I'm older than you, therefore I have authority. I'd like to say more about that, but I want to move quickly. Administrator takeaways. Culture building is essential with teachers and other staff. It's not just for kids, but it's got to be modeled and encouraged by the adults in both a district and in a school. I can't say enough about the importance of strategic planning. There's got to be a sense of mission and goals and objectives so that you actually know why you're doing what you're doing and how you measure if you've done that successfully. Training and technical assistance infrastructure is essential. I've seen districts go ahead and put restorative justice or restorative practices into student codes of conduct without building out any way that people know what this is and how to do it. And, of course, driving from data. Implementation has got to be driven by your data. What outcomes do you want based on the data of where you're seeing problems, where's their most need, and how are you going to measure and evaluate your success? For parents, getting educated. Learn as much as you can about restorative practices and what your school is doing. If you want this at your school, build support and demand. Look at how you can support and work with your school. Learn to support the school in implementing with fidelity and understand what they're doing or not doing. Get trained as a facilitator and come work in the school. Understand what it means to have restorative practices as part of the school code of conduct. And to look at how you can use this at home. I do this all the time. I have a 12-and-a-half-year-old son, and we do this at home. But look at how we can communicate the same message to kids in schools and at home so that they're getting the same approach for how we respond to breaks in relationship and conflict and be a restorative leader. Finally, sorry, I've talked a lot, and I'd love to hear some questions if anybody's got them.
Mm-hmm. Molly, thank you so
much,
Mara.
For me?
Yeah, absolutely. So just a reminder, please press 1 on your telephone keypad in order to raise your hand, and I'm hoping we can get to everybody that might have questions, comments, and points to converse about with Mara, Dr. Schiff, and with Nancy. So I'll go ahead and start that process. Just press 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're dialing in from Skype, you can do the same on your Skype keypad. Eileen, welcome. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Northern California.
Excellent. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so impressed that you've been able to do this on such a large scale and so comprehensively. And I was wondering, what about this particular school district set them apart in terms of really embracing this and really wanting it and inviting it and the whole thing?
That's a really good question. But I think you answered your own question, to tell you the truth. I think what set them apart is they really wanted it. I think that nobody was coerced. My sense was that there was not coercion. And I strongly believe that school board support, which passes through to the superintendent and then all of the people who work under her in this district, everybody supported it. And while perhaps we didn't want to implement at this scale early on, there was no question that we were going to do it, that we were going to own it, and I think one of the things that set it apart is again, inherent in the title of the presentation, people were thirsty for it. They really wanted it. They knew that there was a problem, but didn't have the strategies or the techniques for how to address it. And this answered that. This was like a drink of cool water to thirsty people. It really felt like that. Nancy, is there anything you would add to that?
That's very, very, very true, Mara. And also, I can't help but comment on one of the schools in the district that is in a more affluent neighborhood. And when the principal talked about this, first thing is they didn't say this is from the district, which is what I recommend because, you know, everybody have their barriers on when they hear something's coming down from the district. What they did basically is to have a community building, a circle. The people that were trained over the summer, they did that in the small learning community, professional learning communities at their school. And then after doing a circle, and a lot of the teachers were, got, you know, emotional because they were being vulnerable. They were being honest. And when you can't help but get emotional sometimes when you're doing those circles. And after they got a feeling of what a circle is about, especially a community building circle, they really got it. They understood. And the principal told me that the teachers thanked her for bringing this. They didn't realize it was from the district, for bringing this new concept, idea, philosophy, whatever, to the school. So that was, it was really interesting to hear them say that and say thank you to her. I don't know if that helped you at all, but.
Well, I want to emphasize also what Nancy said. You know, this is a lot about feeling. This is not about telling somebody what to do and giving them a manual to do it. It's very much developing a response to it based in experience and based in feeling experience. And that's when people buy in, when they feel it, not when they're told about it, but when they feel it.
Yeah, and that, I think that the power of that community building circle really makes a big difference when you use that approach. And Mara does a really good job with that. And you can't help but say, wow, this is really powerful. I can see, you can feel the connection being made in the circle.
Yeah. Another
great
question.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Eileen, for that question and comment, and wishing you the best of luck. Sandra, welcome. Would you share where you're from, if you're willing?
Sure, I'm from Wisconsin. And I'm quite a fan of Marshall Rosenberg's nonviolent communication. I studied with him, had an intensive with him, and have followed up with many, many teachers, and I'm glad Jim and Jory are coming up next. Because I'm so familiar and I'm pretty much steeped in that process, when I saw the slide, I feel disrespected when you talk while I'm talking and still say you did something wrong. So hopefully NVC can be moved into this process when it would sound like I feel angry and frustrated and hurt because I need respect while I'm talking. Would you be willing to stop when I'm talking? That kind of language. Rather than I feel disrespected when you talk while I'm talking, that's still saying you did something wrong. Understand my gist?
Go ahead, Mara.
Thanks for coming.
I went to a training on that the other day, and an NVC pointed that out to us, which is really, yeah. So
that's
yeah, we're aware of that, and that would have to be changed. That it was very new, I think, a very new way of looking at it.
It takes a while. It really takes a while to get the language changed. Years, even for trainers who still, you know, fall back into the old patterns. But I'm happy you heard that from somewhere else too. Okay.
It was from NBC actually. I can't wait to take that that workshop.
Oh,
someone from NBC out of Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for listening.
Thank you for bringing that up.
I'm complete.
Thank you, Sandra, so much, and go ahead and pass the mic to Sherry. Sherry, welcome.
Oh, hi. I'm calling also from Northern California in Sonoma County. I'm actually juggling like three different questions I have right now, but I think I'll start with for the 3-day introductory 101 training for leadership, district leadership. So my first question is, for that training, what would be the big ideas for day one, day two, day three? Obviously not detail level, but just your big broad strokes over what you were trying to get, communicate over to them in those 3 days. And then the other question I have is if you could make a comment on how restorative justice practices addresses disproportionality. I see that it does in the data, but how? Why?
So in that first 3-day training, what we did was we talked a lot before that, and the training was designed specifically for them. In the first day of that training, we did RJ 101. So we did kind of a basic overview of restorative justice, set the context, and then we did some practices in the afternoon. And so they got to feel what it felt like to sit in a circle. The next 2 days were focused on strategic planning, where we really sat and talked about what did they want this to look like in the district, and what was the vision, what was the mission, what were the goals, what were the objectives, what actions needed to be taken. So we really built a strategic plan for 2 days and built a framework for that, which the district administrators then fleshed out for a presentation to the school board. So that, you know, that's the nutshell of what we did in the 3 days.
Not to mention, of course, the Tier 2 and Tier 3. We did some models, some Tier 2 and Tier 3 circles.
That first 3-day training, Nancy, this was before you came on board. I think she's asking about the October 2014 training, that initial RJ 101, and then 2 days. Yeah.
Okay.
That's different than our regular 3-day training.
Oh, yeah.
And then the disproportionality question, that's a really good question. In the trainings that we did over the summer, last summer, we included a segment on cultural competence. In the 2 or 3 days that I usually have to get this training done, I unfortunately don't have enough time to go into as much detail as I would like on issues around cultural competence and implicit bias and racial injustice and historical harm and all of those things. However, Nancy also does a cultural competence training at the district level that's designed to work in concert with this training. And we build in, to the best of our ability, language about why we're doing this in racial disparity, even when we don't directly focus on that specific issue. We find that making people aware of the kind of language and making people aware of the data around disparity is awareness increasing. I will say, though, that we don't yet have the outcome data on that, so we're not really sure where we are. But to answer your question broadly about why does restorative justice affect disciplinary disparity, well, it doesn't always. But depending on how it's designed and implemented, it's not necessarily specifically designed to address that. But it is designed to increase awareness about relationships, about presenting issues, and about bringing people together to discuss what happened, why it happened, what's been the impact, and to have people be more sensitive to issues that perhaps they might not have been as sensitive to when we're not addressing the underlying relationship issues. Does that answer your question? Or at least begin to address it?
Yeah, it does begin to address it. I know that one of the ways that I am an early beginning stages instructor for the IIRP, and you know that one of the ways that we're talking about it is in addressing the implicit bias and the enemy images, you know, that just establishing relationship begins to address that right off the bat, is you're actually having a relationship with students rather than just reacting based on, you know, unconscious bias.
Absolutely.
So I would just add that, but I think there's so much more to take into consideration and think about.
Sure is. Yes. Thank you. Thanks for the question.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sherry, for your work.
Do we have time for one last question? We have one coming in that could be quite pertinent for our learning community. Mara and Nancy, are you okay with one more before we close out tonight?
Sure.
Yes. Oh, yes. Sure.
Super. Okay. Open up the mic to you, Martha. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you. And thank you for what we've heard and received tonight from Orange County.
Are you on a cell phone? I'm having a really hard time hearing.
Oh.
Hello?
I am. Can you hear me now?
Much better. Much better.
Is this better?
Much better.
Okay. So I'm calling from Vermont, and I want to say thank you to all of you, what we've heard and received tonight from Orange County. I this isn't so much a question. I just have two things that we have found to be resourceful and helpful in implementing restorative practices systematically up here in Vergennes, Vermont, in a high school, middle school. And that is that we have a protocol peer review circle for violations that have extended beyond the in-class Tier 1 intervention. And one of them is that whatever we do, we've formed a program or a department that is the resource response restorative program. And whatever interventions we do to serve the school is we have a evaluation that is done at the end of the intervention by teachers as well as students so that we're always looking at the effectiveness of our intervention. And that's mm-hmm. been useful in order to respond to parents or even to bring to school board or anyone that is wanting to know what we do and how effective it is. So it's an evaluation form that we send out online or have students do or teachers do right then and there. There's also, we offer a class for all seventh graders coming into our system who, because the elementary schools are not using the kind of restorative practices that we use. And so we have offered a class for every seventh grader. And we teach restorative justice. We teach the principles you've shared with us tonight. We do role plays, we work with circle, we work with fishbowl in circle, we come up with issues, we look at how to make change. All that you've said in regards to language, we teach ahead of time through this class, and we found that to be really helpful.
Well, where can we get more information on this class? Is it on your website by chance?
Yes, we actually have a website for Vergennes Union High School. We have on our website, we have restorative justice practice, and you can go there and you can see who we are and you can click on a link that gives you more information. We have videos of our protocol peer review circles that we conduct, and we have testimonial, but we also have protocol and what that looks like. And we have mm-hmm. examples of our evaluation forms. As far as we call the course that we teach to all seventh graders called IMPACT. And mm-hmm. I don't have that on the website yet.
Okay. That's interesting. We also have an evaluation form for the post-circle documentation that we have to follow mm-hmm. up to see how the results, you know, what happened, for especially in conflict resolution circles. To see, you know, what happened a week or two later, to see how the students are coming along. And it's not a requirement, but we're thinking about making it perhaps a requirement after, and for schools to post on the website just to show some of the power of the circle. So that's something
exactly.
we're thinking of doing.
Yes, and the questions we ask are primarily based on some of the principles you brought. Is the relationship better with your teacher?
Yes.
Did it change the relationships you have with the other students in the class? Did you find
mm-hmm.
you helped yourself more accountable? And did it have an effect on your grades and how you're feeling when you walk in the classroom now? All those pertinent questions that
I
we
like
can
that.
Refer back to. Yeah, and we have to have in Vermont a research-based practices in regards to bullying or harassment. And so we can refer back to the evaluations to say the roles have changed in regards to the bully and the victim, and they
mm-hmm.
so yeah. And I would love to access your materials. You had mentioned you have an agreement form, and
yes.
some other things you mentioned, and I would love to be able to look at those because we're just getting to a point where we have a form that when we have
okay.
a accountability circle. That we want everyone to sign it and say what's said in here stays in here kind of thing. So, yeah.
Right.
Well, we'll have our email address on the PowerPoint presentation. You can contact me. I would love to continue this conversation with you.
Thank you. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you, Martha. Okay. On that note, I just want to say two things about resources for our learning community. Really important stuff here. Martha, if you would like to send an email to info@peacealliance.org, we can include your information at some point on probably on our discussion forum, which is listed right now on the screen share. Just pointing your attention back to the screen share for a moment. That's at the Teach Peace Forum. That's a great place to share information and resources. And also, secondly, definitely going to be posting anything that Nancy and Mara would like to share with the learning community, including possibly those agreements and things, if that's appropriate to do that there. Again, that's at our main course site, which is peacealliance.org, Teach course page. You can see it on the screen share again, with the password Peace is the Way. That is a wellspring of resources for each of our sessions, where you can download the audios, look at the slideshows, keep those for your information and resources. And so before we close tonight, I want to thank everyone so much for the questions, and we're getting close to needing to close. So just welcoming you, Mara, and Nancy, for any closing comments before my final announcements and then our collective good night.
I'd just like to say thank you for having me, and sorry I'm so congested and I had the flu, and it was a pleasure doing this and sharing and talking to the community.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Molly, for inviting me and hosting this amazing forum and online learning community experience for everybody, and I'm really grateful and honored to have been able to be here.
Well, thank you so much, both of you, and again, we'll make sure that for everyone here, and even those of you who weren't on tonight's live session, that we keep connected and in touch with all of our faculty. And in order to do that, we're trying to turn around quickly the audios and the slideshows for you within 24 hours. So usually you'll find them there on Thursdays in general. There's been a couple times where we've needed to do some edits on the slideshows just to make sure we're presenting the correct information. But please hang tight and know that those are going up as expediently as we can. I just would like to share, I'm really looking forward to next week as well. As mentioned earlier, we're going to be hosting Jim and Jory Mansky for Session 5, which is next Wednesday, March 9th at this same time frame, 5 p.m. Pacific to 6:30 p.m. Pacific. They'll be hosting, co-hosting and co-guiding From Conflict to Connection, Speaking Peace for the Next Generation. Again, that's with Jim and Jory Mansky. They're longtime certified CNVC trainers, and they're really looking at helping mindfulness training in U.S. primary and secondary education, which has been becoming increasingly commonplace, expanding that and helping you to get tools and perhaps a better understanding on the relationship between mindfulness exercises and the developing brain in children, as well as they're going to be talking about how mindfulness is used to work with toxic stress and secondary trauma in adult educators and caregivers. So it's going to be another great session next week. Thank you so much for being a part of this international learning community. Thank you again to the NACRJ and the Peace Alliance for being the co-presenters of this overview course. And again, this is Molly Rowan Leach. I hope you'll stay in touch, give us some feedback and questions, and thank you so much for being a participant in this overview. I'm going to open up our lines and so that we can all say goodnight. So just hang on, and I'm going to go ahead and unmute us. Go ahead and say goodnight.
Thank you.
Bye.
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 Thanks. Peace, Reliance.
Bye.